And it looks like next up we have the Maine Seaweed Council. Want to come introduce yourselves?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Joint Standing Committee. I want to thank you for the opportunity to introduce ourselves. My name is Bonnie Toby, and I work for Source. I'm the operations manager for Source Micronutrients. We've been in business since 1975. I'm also the current president of the Maine Seaweed Council, which is what brings me here today. And I just want to give you a nice overview, summary of what the council is and what we do. And then I'm going to turn it over to a couple of our board member council members as well to help out. So the Maine Seaweed Council was established in 1993 with the following mission and purpose. And that was to protect the ecosystems of Maine's marine algae, develop and adhere to sustainable cultivation and harvest practices, promote the use of Maine seaweeds, educate the public, regulators, and elected officials to provide a collaborative forum for its members. And we are a diverse group made up of harvesters, growers, buyers, processors, researchers, students, artists, and interested parties. We are a nonprofit organization, and membership and partners number over 100. And as you know, harvesting in Maine is not new. It's been around for a long time. So this wonderful picture here from 1882, we appreciate the use of it from the Heritage New England Archives. Kind of shows a little bit of the history of Maine and harvesting. And by the early 1970s, infrastructure was needed to process this seaweed. So companies were founded and a lot of jobs were created back then. Today, many types of seaweeds are harvested, both wild and farmed. Maine has over 10 edible seaweeds, and they're very colorful and beautiful. So you can see them there. And whether they're farmed or wild, seaweed has a lot of uses. And that's one of the big questions we feel is, what are the uses? What does it go into? So nutritional supplements for people and pets, of course, and pharmaceuticals, nutraceuticals, cosmetics, skincare, art, fertilizers, extracts, biostimulants. Seaweed not only provides food directly, but it also helps to grow other food more efficiently, which is wonderful. And I do want to just cite a local study that was done a couple of years ago. And George may be able to speak to that further if you have questions. But this was a farm, a potato farm in Aroostook County. And they put seaweed extract on it, and the seaweed extract increased the yield by 3,000 potatoes per acre with no additional fertilizers or pesticides. And that is wonderful. And that's just that much less going off into our waterways. The Maine Seaweed Council has been a partner in research since its inception in 93. Some of our current collaborations include providing testing material for the cow methane research that is being done by Bigelow Laboratories and Associates, assisting researchers from the University of Maine, Maine Maritime Academy, Maine Sea Grant, Scudic Institute, and others in their study on conserving rockweed animal systems for a sustainable harvest. They call it CRASH. prior to 2019, members of industry, science, conservation, and the Department of Marine Resources collaborated to create the fisheries management plan for rockweed. Due to an unfortunate ruling in Ross versus Acadia, the fisheries management plan was never made official, though it does continue to be a guiding document for us. And the Maine Seaweed Council is currently working on a very extensive document for best sustainability practices, taking all that we've learned from the fisheries management plan, the decades of experience, but it's being expanded to all of the different species of seaweeds, so that whether you are a seasoned seaweed person or somebody just coming in, you will have the guidelines needed to make sure that all of those species are taken care of. And I'm going to ask George to come up next here and just talk a little bit about the issues and practical implications of ownership, some of the challenges that we deal with. Stay? Okay. I'll slide right over.
Good afternoon, Senator Rennie, and you rest of you who have made it. My name is George Seaver, and I was processing in 1977 with the early, well, you have a picture of my original boss there. That was from down east. I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a realtor, but in the course of this issue about, well, who actually owns the intertidal zone, I've been part of a lot of conversations and listened quite a bit. I promised myself I would read and not wander. In March of 2019, the Maine High Court ruled that seaweed attached to rocks belonged to the owner of that area of the intertidal zone. In reaching that opinion, the court explicitly did not consider the question of intertidal ownership. Instead, the legal focus was if seaweed was a fishery. The Maine legislature has not reconciled that court decision with the longstanding laws, regulations, definitions that have been Maine's law of the land with respect to the historical relationship between Mainers and the marine resources located in the intertidal zone. Specifically, all of the regulations define seaweed as a fishery, thus including it on the list of harvestable marine resources available to the public since about 1647. This is in direct contrast with the court's ruling. This conundrum is what you guys are going to be faced with, and I'm now editorializing. So I'm hoping that what you get from this is, wow, this is a mess. So property taxes, again, not a realtor. Property taxes for homes with frontage on the shore are calculated based on the appraised market value of that property. The adjacent acreage below mean high water is seldom measured and never appraised for local property taxes. If it were, the property taxes would actually increase by at least the value of the claimed marine resources. Considering the obligations and liabilities associated with owning those acres, it's probably better for the landowners not to own the sand, mud, and slippery rocks. Some landowners think that if they lose what they consider to be their ownership, that they've somehow been punished. Protecting the ecosystem. Rockweed has been commercially harvested for centuries in Maine and Canada, and in fact, the rest of the coastlines facing the North Atlantic Ocean. When done properly, it improves the health of the seaweed resource and supports the other living critters who rely on it. Of the over 3,000 miles of Maine coastline, only a small percentage is practical to harvest. It was estimated by the University of Maine that seasonal factors such as ice and wave action harvest on average roughly 40% of the biomass per year. Commercial harvesting in total has slowly climbed to less than 3% of the standing rockweed resource during the past 50 years. It was harvested in Maine, in Booth Bay, actually, back in the 1860s. So it's been going on a long time. The part I know about is the part that I was here for. The picture on the front relates to the next section. It's my beach and it's private. Well, regardless of the legal conclusion at the end of the title searches, it remains longstanding common law that fishing, fowling, and navigating are allowed in the intertidal zone, all the intertidal zone. The courts have traditionally been lenient with respect to what's included under those three categories. For example, scuba diving was considered navigating in a case not too long ago. According to DMR and even the IRS, harvesting seaweed is fishing. Property lines. Assuming again, and when I say assuming the title searches, the Ross ruling said that or acknowledged the possibility that the person who lived up the hill wasn't actually the owner. So you do have to go back to the 1700s sometimes to find a deed where the person could prove they owned it or not. The next speaker has been doing, been down in the weeds on that subject, so I won't go there. Assuming again that the title searches supported that a parcel of intertidal zone were privately owned and the owner didn't want the seaweed harvested, that landowner would need to have a survey done that would go to the current low water mark, legally define the property lines, and put signs up to communicate that the seaweed on that property should not be harvested. The sign would need to be specific to seaweed because clams, mussels, and worms can still be harvested. The property lines would need to be evident regardless of the coming and going tide, meaning kind of a problem. We've had several people refer to climate change. This is a real thing. Rising water levels along the shore. In an unfortunate future where municipalities or the state consider constructing barriers or seawalls to protect shore residences, it will be necessary to have public ownership of these areas where protective construction might be warranted. Privately held beaches would open financial, legal, and permitting cans of worms that I can't even imagine. One of the things, there was an effort legislatively a few years ago to try and clarify the ownership. And one of the things that a lot of senators and representatives heard that helped them reach a position was that it would be a taking if the state returned the ownership to the public. My response to that is, it would be a taking if the state clarifies, or the comment was, it would be a taking if the state clarified that the intertidal zone is a public resource. The state would owe the property shore owners payments for their loss, a great liability to the state. Well, it would only be a taking if the market value of that shore property decreased. And the market value of shore property depends on the view, not the amount of seaweed. Fishing, fowling, and navigating are still allowed regardless of ownership. So there's no financial impact to who we think owns it. And you don't even affect what goes on there, with the possible exception of seaweed. So where is the taking? There are hundreds of jobs and millions of dollars associated with the decades-old seaweed processing businesses. We compete internationally. We are a small player in a world full of people producing seaweed extracts. If the growth or survival of these businesses were hurt by the uncertainties of access to the needed raw material, there will be financial damage to those businesses that likely would be a taking. I'm not sure how that would ever get pursued, but I can tell you, I'm glad I'm old, because somebody's going to have a problem with this. Just to continue, that's the end of my formal part, but I just wanted to bolster a little bit of what Bonnie said about the potatoes. That was the first thing that I did with potatoes back in the 80s, early 80s. And we found that we could get a 5 to maybe 10% increase in yield with a gallon of this extract. Pretty amazing. No extra fertilizer, no extra pesticides. It's a matter of eliciting growth responses in potatoes. And I hesitate to say this out loud, but it fundamentally boils down to, and potatoes is just a good heavy example, but pounds of seaweed can produce tons of food. It is literally pounds of seaweed produce tons of food in the extraction biostimulant side of it. So if there's any questions for me, I'm ready.
Yeah, Representative Dudera. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. When you harvest rockweed, are you cutting it to a certain length? Are you yanking it out? How do you do that?
By law, there she is. By law, so I got to say this right. You can't cut more than 16 inches. It has to be 16 inches still there. Our company hand harvests. We don't need as much as people who dehydrate it, but we hand harvest and the person cuts it and leaves it. The thing that's important to kind of come to grips with is people don't like to work hard. And the easiest way to harvest seaweed is to take the big plants that are floating the highest. You would be crazy to overharvest. There's no reason to overharvest. You'd be breaking your back for no reason. So yes, we cut it. There's also harvesters that do a beautiful job of not going too far down the plant. And the mechanical harvesters also move graze looking for the where the seaweed is the biggest.
So we run mechanical harvesters. We run two at a time, and they were specifically designed so that you can't cut. My brother likens it to like a lawnmower. If you had a lawnmower, you could let it run all day long, and it wouldn't cut any more than it's going to cut. So it's predetermined, and that's why if mechanical harvesters work so well in that respect. They're kind of slow and ugly, but they work.
Brian Beal compares it to tipping to make wreaths. You don't kill any trees, you just take the tips.
We should get
John.
Yeah. Roll in here.
John is an amazing title searcher.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Senator Rennie and members of the Joint Standing Committee on Marine Resources. My name is John Groton. I'm the resource manager for North American Kelp. It's a rockweed processing facility that's been operating in Waldoboro, Maine for 52 years. In my time in working in the industry, I've seen many changes, but none of them have affected our industry as heavily or as negatively as the Ross versus Acadian Sea Plants Limited case adjudicated in 2019. This case stating that the ownership of attached rockweed can privately be owned is incongruous with Maine's marine resources laws, statutized in Title 12 and Title 1, and Maine's common law. The Ross decision, stating that the riparian owner can hold title and fee to rockweed growing in the intertidal zone, does not take into the account that the majority of the intertidal lands in Maine were intended to be held in trust for the public. Town proprietors conveyed parcels whose boundaries stopped at mean high watermark, but gave propriety to the riparian owner. This meant that the riparian owner could build docks, wharfs, and other implements to aid in marine commerce without the threat of adverse possession or other loss rising from public use. Again, this was done in an effort to aid marine commerce, not hinder it. This public ownership of intertidal lands is thoroughly documented in resources such as the Cumberland Original Proprietor's Shoreline Reservation Study by Ann Wagner, as prepared for the town of Cumberland, August 15th in 1978. This study was conducted in Maine's intertidal lands from York to the Kennebec River and concluded that the intertidal lands were held in trust for the public. This study further researched and supported and elaborated on by Orlando DeLogue, Professor Emeritus from the Maine Law School in Maine Beaches Are Public Property, published in 2017. And again, ownership is supported by Edwin Churchill in The Great Land Grab, Maine Beaches Ripped from the True Owners, the Town Inhabitants, published in 2019. What we are facing today is a casual degradation of public trust rights in the intertidal lands of Maine. Maine case law has stated that ownership of discrete parcels of intertidal lands can be conveyed in private entities through construction of deeds, the language of which is incredibly important. When a deed defines a property as having a seaward boundary that extend to the shore, to the flats, to the bank, all intend to convey parcels that stop at the high water mark. Conversely, when a deed defines properties as having seaward boundaries to the sea, the river, the waters, they all imply the parcels to be owned at the mean low water mark. The problem lies in conveyances made over the years. Conveyance after conveyance, especially when parcels are split or into several others, tend to change the language when used in defining boundaries. If the author of the deed is not aware of the implications that come when selecting boundary language, the seaward boundary can be moved accidentally and without ever the realization having it occurred. As the legal nemo dat rule states, no one can give what they do not have. I've seen this time and time again in my researching of parcels. It is the norm, not the exception, that the boundary language has changed. I bring forward these points today to outline and accentuate the discord between Maine's statutized laws as found at Maine's Title I and Title 12 and the decisions handed down through the courts, and to point out that while ownership of Maine's intertidal lands is all but settled, the Maine legislature has long since declared that it owns the marine resources adjoining our coast. In Title I, Chapter 1, Subsection 2A, the state of Maine declares that it owns and controls the harvesting of the living resources adjoining our coastline for a distance of 200 miles or to the furthest edge of the continental shelf, whichever is greater, subject only to the boundary of Canada. Control over the harvesting of these living resources shall be held by licenses or permits issued by the Department of Marine Resources. The marine resources adjoining our coast must be owned and managed by the state for the benefit of all. This is the way things should be and always have been in Maine. To try to change that now after 200 years goes against the laws and customs of our state. I have a bunch of definitions from our Title 12 and Title 1 in here that define what fishing is, what our boundaries are, and why seaweed harvesting is a fishery. That's all I have today. Yes, I have copies for everyone as well.
Yeah, Representative Strout.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on the fertilizer part of it, my father has been in the fertilizer business for a long time. It's Buzz Pinkham, Damascotta, and I think you guys may have worked with him. So I guess my question is, as the PFAS things go through and we're losing the fertilizers and the farmlands, seaweed seems to be a good opportunity to substitute for that and make that, you know, the clean way to go. So how does this affect the harvesting and the amount to contribute if you're getting cut off by what you can gather?
Well, as far as PFAS, it is a great concern in Maine. One thing that we're seeing in the seaweed industry is that we're not having the problems with it as they are on land. So they're trying to define ways to test the seaweed and on a laboratory standard. That's another thing that they're currently developing. If we have less access, there's going to be less inputs that we can put into that arena, into that farming aspect. We've seen more and more pushback from upland landowners and entities, and just the public perception that where rockweed can be owned, in the courts it was promulgated that it is owned by the riparian owner, and it's simply not the case. The hundreds of research or parcels that are researched, it's the majority of them that it's not the case at all. And that over the years, that language has changed. And it now implies that it is owned to the low water mark.
With respect to the fertilizer question more specifically, and PFAS does not tend to happen in the ocean water where all the nutrients for the seaweed come from. We don't replace fertilizer. We make the fertilizer that someone already uses 10% more effective. So you get, you know, I've talked to potato growers, and the last thing they want to do is have a little less yield with even much less fertilizer. They would rather use the same fertilizer and get more potatoes. As time goes by, that and as the cost of fertilizers go up, if anything, it strengthens our position, because we're going to give you more potatoes for that fertilizer, whatever you used. And we've been doing research all over the country, right? Around the world a little bit, that documents the response to this biostimulant. It's not providing fertility, it's providing signals to the plants, and it's all kinds of plants. So yeah, the other thing that I wanted to stick here for what John was just saying is, several of us at this microphone today have talked about gentrification being one of the problems. We are ground zero for that problem. In fact, I wish all the realtors in the world would say, isn't it beautiful out there? Aren't you glad you don't have to pay taxes on it? You can look at it. That's the value of your property, what you can see, not what you can slip in. And if people coming with the money from the house they sold in New Jersey knew that what they were buying was the view and not the mud, all of our lives would be better.
Any other questions? Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was born this way.
Must have been painful.
Who has more fun than us, huh? My question is there something uniquely obvious or obnoxious about harvesting rockweed that would make people have such a fuss over it? Is it the extended periods of time spent in front of a particular home that is an annoyance, or what's the
I think you get three. I'll give you my answer.
Yeah.
Because we don't. We hand harvest very quietly, and you, in order to be efficient at it, you move around.
At low tide.
Or half tide.
Half tide.
You can do it at high tide.
Okay.
So we go back to the same regions. We harvest mostly out of Friendship. Most of our seaweed comes around that way. And we haven't had too many people unhappy. Now, we aren't making any noise at all, except we're making no noise at all. If you have a mechanical harvester and go there every third year.
Yeah, that's the mechanical harvesters. Obviously, they're like a lobster boat. And some lobster boats are much, much louder. We have hooked them up to decibel readers, and they're not louder than anything else. It's mm-hmm. just your point is good that if it's close to somebody's house, they simply don't like that. And that's just the way that is. But George has a very good point. We have tried in every possible way to be as considerate as possible, because we do rotate like a farmer rotates their crops. We rotate our ledges. So they're only going to see us for probably a couple of weeks every 3 years. And that's enough for them to complain, but that's just the way that is. We're not there at all. We're not even there on the weekends. We don't harvest Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. So it's just one of those things where we try to be very considerate. And thankfully, we do have good relationships with a lot of the places that we do harvest, because we've been there for so long. So we're very fortunate in that respect. Unfortunately, at least in my humble opinion, is that when the Ross decision ruled on seaweed as being somebody's shrub, which is exactly what it was deemed as, that gave a lot of people the impetus to simply say, oh, I didn't know that. That's my shrub. Then I don't want you to harvest my shrub. So it's just really, really, really important to understand that seaweed is a fishery, just like any other fishery. It's been around for a long, 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 long time. Definitely considered a fishery by the state of Maine, by the IRS, all the things that we've gone over. And fishing, fowling, and navigation is a right for Mainers. And so we are indeed ground zero in that respect.
Maybe if you tell them you're trimming their rockweed for them at a no cost.
They wouldn't mind if I came with my lawnmower.
Thank you.
People ask us sometimes to harvest.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Bucket and then Representative Strout.
Thank you.
No.
There we go. Just for clarification, so you're not on their property, correct? You do everything coming in on the water.
Yes.
Okay. So you're not crossing or getting on the beach or anything.
Some of them think it's their property because of this. Court ruling that said, well, the court ruling didn't say they own it. The court ruling didn't address it. There was a court case that created this Moody Beach sign that I passed out that in the 80s, I think it was, that was just flawed reasoning. And we're working to try and get that corrected now. There's a court case going on as we speak.
Thank you.
My response to Representative Thorne's question would be, it's not so much for us that people see us harvesting in front of their property. They're opposed to it from a sustainability standpoint. And that's because there's this misconception that it's being over harvested, where rockweed is it's a baseline for all these other species that are out there in this intertidal zone. They use it for cover and food and everything else. There's this misconception that when we harvest it, we're depleting this and it's gone and it's everything else is just being scoured. And it's simply not the case. I think our largest year was 2017. I think we harvested 22 million pounds of seaweed were landed in the state. That's between 1-2% of the standing biomass that's out there. So it's, again, very, very small amounts.
Big numbers, small percents.
Most of the coast of Maine is not accessible to harvest anyway. So there's that to consider. So to be able to harvest the little places that we can is crucial.
It puts more stress on the areas that are accessible when you're limiting it through upland entities' discretion.
Representative Strout.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that was actually a follow-in to my question, the aquaculture. So growing seaweed on ropes and things like that, is that something that is a sustainable or an upcoming industry or what you...
I love it. I love it for rockweed. The problem with it is the scale. And rockweed taking 3 years to really go from like a starting stage to something that you can do something with. There's a lot of time with that and just the scale and the prevalence of ASCO in Maine. It's all over the place. It's a resource that is waiting to be utilized. And if we're just putting it into private entities' hands for conservation reasons, it's a waste. I mean, it is a benefit, but we're not taking that economic benefit back in our communities from it.
It's so abundant. The rockweed is so abundant that if you do a cost analysis, yes, you can grow it, but why would you?
Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Are all three of you from Waldoboro? Are all three of you from Waldoboro? Oh, okay. Oh, you're in Bath. Okay. So I think next up, I believe Kristen Porter is joining us via Zoom. She's